All right, here we go. A rare middle of the week podcast for me. It is the 17th of April. It is about 49 degrees here in Bismarck. It rained like heck yesterday, but now the skies are somewhat clear. Temperatures are trying to rise, and this is There Is a Way Out. My name is Bromo. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is 2/17/09. I'm very pleased to bring guests on. That's my real strength. I tell everyone this. First of all, I don't have a degree or I don't have a certificate. I'm not an expert at this at all. I just have 15 years of experience, which I try to share with everybody that I can on Facebook or however I come across. And I love the fact that I can bring people on. And I tell everybody this. It's not me that I feel that this podcast is strong. It's my guests. And tonight, I was able to locate this gentleman. And I want to tell this guy why I got a hold of him in a second. Jay, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Bromo.
Jay Rizzo, you have a very soothing voice. Did you know that?
Thank you.
And where are you calling me from? You're from Bismarck, right? Where are you from?
Yeah, I actually live out here in Lincoln, but I grew up in Partial.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is your age, if you don't mind me getting really personal?
I'm 45 years old today.
Oh, this is your birthday?
No.
Oh, yeah, just today.
I'm 45. I'll be 46 in June.
Okay. Yeah, you and I are almost... I'm going to be a lot younger than you in May. I'm almost 36, Jay. I'm not sure if you know that.
Oh, no.
That's a stupid joke. I'm way older than you. I got shoes older than you are. Okay, so... You're from the North Dakota area, though, correct?
Yeah, I was born in Montana, though.
Okay. How many, what do you got, what kind of family members do you have, if you don't mind mentioning?
I have two daughters that I raised, and I have two sons that I didn't raise.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me give you a background of how I met Jay. We have a mutual friend that I was able to contact, and she came on and did a wonderful podcast with me. I saw your name, and I think somehow I threw you out an invite, and you were gracious enough to accept it for my Facebook page, There Is a Way Out. Anybody, by the way, who hears this, who's not a member, please become one. There's no cost. You can be anonymous if you want. There's you're not going to be put on an email address or anything like that. Nobody will reach out to you unless you want them to. It's a wonderful page of hope, and people share their stories, and they just check up on them one another. It's called There Is a Way Out. It's on Facebook, you can find. I found Jay there, and just the other day, I was loving the fact that you are on fire with your sobriety. You know that, don't you?
Yes.
You are. And you were telling everybody you're coming up. Tell everybody your sobriety date.
My sobriety date is 11/18/2021.
Okay. And if you want to, what was your drink of choice? What was your poison? Was it alcohol, drugs, both?
Yeah, it was alcohol. It was basically vodka.
Okay.
The go-to.
That was me, too?
Yeah.
Any kind of vodka will do, as you know?
Anything that got me drunk.
When did you start drinking?
I started drinking when I was 14.
Did you drink because you were around friends? Did somebody introduce it to you? Was it in your family?
Actually, it was curiosity. We seen the older kids doing it when I was in, it's probably elementary, middle school, about, seeing the older kids out partying and whatnot, and it seemed fun. So
yeah, seemed fun.
I tried it.
You saw people laughing at parties. How were you able to get the booze? Was it snuck to you? That's easy.
Yeah. The first time I ever got drunk, I had a buddy, and his dad had a liquor cabinet. So we made a concoction of all the liquors, and
oh man,
first time I ever got inebriated was that time.
You know, I laugh. You know, you and I have so much in common, because when I was in my early teens, did the same thing at a friend's house. He had this goofy looking bar, and there was a billion different bottles in there, and he started thinking he was funny. And he started pouring a bunch into it, like a big one huge tumbler glass. And after about two glasses of that, I could barely ride my bike two blocks home. So you and I have a lot in common. You remember that was like, right? You remember being wobbly and fun for a while?
For a while, yeah.
And then, of course, you wake up with a headache or someone, yeah. someone catches booze on your breath and they give it to you and you get in trouble yep. or whatever. But you probably went back to it after a while, right? I mean, you found booze yes. not a problem to get a hold of, right?
Exactly.
So you started pretty young.
Yes.
Did you maintain that or did you do anything else like pot or anything like that come your
yeah,
way?
Yeah, it started out with the alcohol, and then obviously seeing the older kids, you know, smoking weed. So, you know, we had to try the weed, too, and loved that also at the time, you know.
Did you find yourself, like, wanting to drink? Not wanting yet. Let's not get to that stage. But did you find yourself exploring more and more of that as you got older? Did you want to drink every day?
Yeah, I got into the habit of, let's drink to be different. Let's drink to be the standout. Let's drink to be the guys behind the school, you know.
Yeah.
Passing around a joint and a jug. That was us.
So let me ask you this. What kind of drunk were you? What? How did this change? How did drinking and alcohol change Jay Rizzo? How did that make you?
I was pretty much the life of the party. Like, when I was drunk, I walked into a room, jumped in a car, all the chicks had dibs on me is what I thought.
So not like me. I mean, I would be bold at points, but I had no chicks interested in me at all.
Oh, man.
I had no game no matter what I was doing.
I could have
put a Brad Pitt mask on and walk into a room full of drunk people, and that wouldn't do anything. So you did you feel like the alcohol and whatever may pot or whatever, did you feel like that changed you? You knew it, too?
Yeah, exactly. Like, it totally made me a different person from, you know, the childhood I was raised up in. So yeah, it was great.
What kind of childhood were you raised in? Were you around a strict family? Were they strict?
Yeah, I was raised by a Marine. My father died when I was 3, so I never knew him.
I'm sorry.
And my mom remarried and she married a Marine. Obviously I was the stepchild.
Yeah. Oh boy. I'm sorry about that. I mean,
that's fine.
Is he still alive when she remarried?
Yeah. Yeah, he's the Marine stepdad, still alive, still calling pops, still love the guy to death.
And
I have nothing against him.
We'll talk about that a little further into the podcast. I'm sure you have a wonderful relationship with him now, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, do me a favor, Jay. You make sure you tell him from me, thank you for his service. My mom and dad taught me to be very, very gracious towards the military and police and all of that. Okay, so you were around a strict family. Was there any drinking around your family that you would see?
No, actually, my mom was sober, and the stepdad, the Marine guy, he was smoking pot regularly.
Oh, he was?
Yeah.
Was he still in the military when he was doing that, or I'm sure they...
No.
Oh,
no,
well, he
by
was...
the time he met my mom, he was discharged and started a family.
Okay, so you were pretty much in an environment where they weren't encouraging you to drink or anything like that.
No.
Not at all.
Not at all. Oh. It was crazy.
So you started sneaking and drinking behind their backs?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And you're in your teens, and you're with do you have a large group of friends or just a few?
Yeah, we had a few. You know, there was maybe 5 of us at the most, little misfits.
So what happened after your teens? Did you go to college? What'd you do?
14, all the way up until I was 19. I dropped out of school when I was a junior.
Okay.
And, when I was a junior, I basically left my, the care of my mom, and I started couch surfing.
Yeah.
Started, crashing on buddies' couches and whatnot. And I just lived on the streets, basically, until I was, like, 21.
I've never done that. Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people that have. When you're young, and wait a minute, were you out here in North Dakota when you were doing all that?
Yeah, I was in the partial area.
All right, let's back up a little bit. In California, you can be homeless 365 days a year. No sweat. I mean, if it rains, maybe. If it gets a little bit below 40 degrees, no sweat.
Yeah.
In North Dakota, man, I'll tell you one thing I've learned. I don't know how anybody can live on the streets during the winter. I don't know how you do it. Do you understand what I'm saying here?
Yeah, there was a few times I've crawled in windows and people didn't know I was there.
Oh,
yeah, I crawled in. I was cold, slept on the couches. They'd wake up the next morning and I'd be there, and all was forgiving because it was freezing out.
Well, you better. I mean, I would forgive somebody if I saw them shivering in the corner of my place. But I'm telling you, my California friends that are listening to this have, and I'm not trying to wave a I'm so cool flag, but they have no idea what it's like when it's minus 10 with a windshield of like 160, minus below 160, right? Am I right or am I wrong?
You're right.
So you were homeless for a while, or you were just on the streets. You knew you probably could maybe check back in with your parents or what?
No, actually, she remarried. She divorced the Moringa and remarried. And the guy she married was horrible. He was even worse. So I left the care of her, and I basically just started staying with friends because I didn't want to live in the house with him.
Was he violent?
Yeah, he was mentally abusive. Come to find out, he was sexually abusing my two little sisters.
Oh.
So that became we knew about that later on in life.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was really, really mentally abusive. Like, he would threaten to beat us up, and you know, he would have us basically in check all the time, walking on eggshells.
Yeah.
So I couldn't take it. No. I was 16 and I left.
For how long were you out in the streets? So
far. I was 16 all the way up until I was 21.
You said you were sofa hopping. You were, you know, like, can I stay over there? Can I do that? Can I do that? I understand that. Until you're about 21. And then then what happened when you were in your 20s?
When I turned 21, I moved in with my grandma and grandpa in Newtown.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was that like? Did they accept you pretty open arms?
Yeah. Yep, open arms. I had nowhere to go. Streetwalker. I basically slept on their kitchen floor, under the kitchen table, on couch cushions.
Yeah. Were you drinking still?
Yes, I was.
Did they know about it?
I'm pretty sure they did, but I didn't think they did.
Okay. Well,
you know how that goes.
You know how that goes, because you and I think that we can fool everybody.
Right.
And most of the time, you know, they're a little bit more wise. They know when we've had a few, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But they loved you, and they had you over at your grandparents, right?
Yes.
And how long did you do that for?
I stayed with them for 2 years.
Awesome. So you were able to still maintain the going out with your friends, but you had a place to come back to, and you still drank.
Yeah.
And you
I actually went to community college in Newtown.
Oh, yeah? What did you major? What did you major in?
Associates of Applied Science, Construction Technology.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I started my construction trade there. I stayed on the kitchen floor, slept in my car.
Yeah.
And there was a detached trailer that I actually stepped in with no power. I slept in that, too.
Wow, that's pretty cool, man. That's something I could never do.
Right. I was just, I don't know, I adapted and overcome, as my stepdad would say.
Were you able to maintain a daily dose of drinking and knowing when to, you know, when you can kind of put it together and fall asleep and get up and do it again later on that day? Or were you able to?
Yeah.
So you're able to keep that as a habit, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
And you probably loved it, right?
I did.
What did you love about it?
I actually liked like I did when I found it the first time, the feeling that it gave me, you know, the inebriation, the mindset change.
Yeah.
I loved that feeling. So I chased it.
You chased it. Explain to people what that means when you chased it.
I liked it. In my story, in my, everyday environment, I like using, especially when I sponsor guys, I tell them it's called, like, basically chasing the dragon.
Yeah.
You know, the big, happy dragon that's flying in the sky, man. And obviously, you're never going to catch him, but the chase is on.
You know, you and I are on this podcast now, but I want you to take yourself to where your group is and just explore what you do with your group with my listeners and now your listeners, because we're on this podcast. I want you to share, if you want, if you're ready, share and continue your story like you would if you were at a meeting, if that's okay with you.
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
Yeah, so now, like you said, you're chasing. You're at a comfortable place where you're safe with your grandparents. At one point, did the chasing and the drinking become not enjoyable? Do you remember that?
Yeah, exactly. I was 23, actually. 2 years on my grandparents, I started getting in trouble. in Newtown, which is reservation, yep, the three affiliated tribes.
Okay.
I started getting pulled over. So I basically accumulated like 3 DUIs in one summer.
Explain to people that are not familiar with tribes and that kind of culture and where you lived. They have their own police out there, right, on a reservation, yep, right? And they have the same kind of rules that we would normally have anywhere else. But did they get to spot you and find out they became aware of you? You said you got 3 DUIs?
Yep, I was singled out every time I drove my vehicle downtown Newtown.
Yep.
I was getting pulled over. I was getting followed. I was marked, basically.
Right.
Yep.
You remember the first time you had to go to jail?
Yeah, exactly. Yep, I was 18. I just turned of age.
Were you scared?
It was scary.
Were you scared?
It was really scary. I was in the man's jail now. No more juvenile jails.
What scared you?
Just being in there with other men, old, you know, stinky, hairy men covered with tattoos. And here I am, a little 18-year-old, timid.
Did you see the sadness of some eyes? Did you see the wreckage of people, yes, that were in there? Did you see that lives,
yep,
were destroyed?
Yep, I did. And the hard part about that is my mom's sister was the head jailer there.
Oh, boy.
And just the way she looked at me and...
Yeah.
You know, I felt like a failure, you know, because I was raised, you know, obviously by the Marine.
Sure.
And then I was on the streets and I learned how to adapt. And basically, just the look she gave me when she seen me in there.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man, I felt like a failure.
Disappointment looks, anger looks,
yep,
bewilderment, yep, looks, why can't you stop looks. Were these looks from somebody that did not understand what the power of alcohol is?
Yep, those are exactly the same looks she gave me.
Yeah.
Like the motherly looks, like just disappointed,
yeah,
sad.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the why can't you stop look.
Exactly, that look.
Time to stop.
Yep.
Time to stop, Bromo. It's time. You've reached your bottom. And then, of course, I'm telling myself, no, I haven't.
Yeah.
And you and I both know when our bottom hit. And when you went to jail for the first time, did anybody pull you aside and strike up a conversation? And did you tell anybody why you went? When you got pulled over for DUI your first time when you went in, did anybody pull you aside and said, hey, maybe did they question your drinking? Did they think that maybe you had a problem?
No, nobody actually did. Like, I was basically a renegade on my own, you know. Grandma was the only one that loved me at the time, you know.
Yeah.
But she wasn't going to say nothing. She's so timid and nice and kind. But she just let me be as long as I didn't bring the party home, you know. And
so
I didn't.
Your grandparents never pulled you to the side and said, hey, Jay, we're worried about you? They were
My grandfather actually did.
Okay.
But the crazy thing is I still remember this, and I justified my drinking as I got older.
Yeah.
I remember him saying it's okay to drink, but not all the time.
Interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's an old cowboy.
Yeah. and was he a retired drinker, do you think, or did he drink a little bit when
No, he was still drinking. He was up in age, but he would still drink.
So let me ask you this. Did it piss you off back then when you knew deep down that you had to have alcohol and you loved it? Did it piss you off when you saw other people say to you, Jay, it's cool you drink and everything, but you should kind of keep it, you know, kind of modify your drinking. Did it piss you off that there were people around us that had no problem with it? It did for me.
Yeah, it did. It did.
Do you know what I mean? Because I couldn't understand it. I couldn't understand how that person over there could have a six-pack of beer in the refrigerator and it's been in there for 3 days. For me, it wouldn't last 6 minutes.
Right. That's exactly how it was. I was like, what's going on? Like, why? Why can you only take a couple shots of a bottle and just put it away, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So were mostly your friends that you spent time with, were they all drinkers and users of drugs? Were they people that you ran with and all that?
Yeah, they were. They were pretty much right alongside me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, at one point, did you yourself realize, hey, maybe I should look into this and maybe I drink too much. Was there a question mark in your head that popped in sometime?
Yeah, it was when I turned 23. I was living in my car in Newtown.
Yeah.
And my mom's brother, he lived in Montana, and he came over to hunt because he was born here in North Dakota, so he was able to hunt here in North Dakota, like deer hunting.
Yeah.
He came one fall, and he took me to the side, and he was like, "Hey, man, you're getting in a lot of trouble here. Why don't you just come home with me?" That's when I was 23.
Okay.
Yeah.
What happened then? Did you go home with him?
Yeah, I took my CDs, filled up my backpack full of the clothes, and parked my car, gave the keys to my grandpa, and jumped in, and I moved to, headed back to Montana with him.
So you get back to Montana now. Are you still thinking about drinking? I mean, you can't just quit.
No,
you just can't quit like that.
Oh, no. Yeah, I was like, all right, new environment, new beers, new alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be lit.
How'd that turn out? Was it not good? Was it great at first and then it turned sour?
Yeah, it was pretty good at first. I stayed in his basement and then I got a job at a high school.
Yeah.
And I eventually got my first apartment. And my apartment was the place to go. Like, I would have parties every weekend.
Of course.
I basically just thrashed it. Like, I just thrashed that apartment. It was my first apartment.
Well, it's yours, and you were by yourself, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sleeping in the living room on the floor.
You're by yourself. You're king of the castle. You can drink when you want.
Yep.
And you can go out and get more booze if you want. And you got a mm-hmm. job, right?
Yep.
Your life is manageable, right?
Exactly.
When did it start not becoming manageable? When you said you said your apartment became kind of a run down a little bit, or you were when did you say to yourself, "I'm having a tough time driving this bus here. I'm having a tough time running my life."
I think when I turned 25, I was expecting my first, actually my second kid.
Oh,
my daughter. She was about ready to be born.
Yeah,
and me and her mom. We basically, you know, we were getting drunk all the time.
Yeah.
There was drinking while she was in the womb.
Oh.
And it was horrible. You know, I drug her down with me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you still feel guilty about that?
Yes, I do.
You said you dragged her down with you. You feel that you were responsible for her drinking?
Yes.
Do you really believe that?
Actually, we met at a party in my apartment, so I met her when we were both drinking.
Yeah.
But, like I said, she got pregnant. We went on this little dry spell for a couple months, and obviously, here I am. Let's go get some beer.
Well, yeah.
And then she, you know, had a couple beers right along with me. And
You know that she loved that taste of alcohol, too, right, Jay? So that's not all you're entirely, all you. That's not all your fault.
No, yeah.
I understand time. I understand big time for you to feel those reservations of, man, I dragged her down into that. Shame on me. But she knew what she was doing.
Yeah.
So you have, now you said you have two kids, correct?
Yeah, two daughters I raised. So let me take it back. When I was 19, I was expecting my first child.
Yeah.
And I didn't raise him. The mother of that child, she left me right away because I continued drinking.
Did she say, sorry, Jay, did she say to you, "Stop or I'll leave"?
Yep. That was exactly it. She said, "Quit this. Let's raise our kid together. Otherwise, I'm gone." And I didn't take her seriously. I'm just getting started. You know what I mean?
Oh, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I'll bet you. I'll bet you when that was raised to you, "Hey, you keep drinking, I'm going to leave." And you know, at that point, it's got to take a landslide. It's got to take more than that to keep you from drinking.
Yep.
And so you made that decision because you didn't want to stop, right?
Right.
Drinking was your life. And you didn't think that she was serious and then she left you?
Yeah, exactly. She ain't going to leave me. She's pregnant, you know, and she needs me to raise this kid. And, you know, that mentality, it's just...
Yeah.
It's crazy.
No, I know. Do you still do you have any contact with the that kid?
No.
No, not at all.
As soon as she split, she just shut the door on me. She married.
Yeah.
So the guy adopted my son and changed his last name.
Yeah.
He's 26 today, and the last time I seen him was he was 2 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough, buddy.
Yeah.
That's part of I hate to tell you, that's part of the deal.
Exactly.
You know, when we
What hurts me is I heard him call me dad when he just started speaking.
Yeah.
Because he used to come stay with me in Newtown. He used to come stay with me on the weekends.
Yeah.
You know, he's a little toddler running around with his, you know, sippy cup, and I actually heard him call me dad. And that gets me to this day, you know what I mean? It just, oh, man.
Well, listen, your sobriety right now, as we jump ahead and we'll go back to where you were, your sobriety right now, think about it. You never know down the road. This young man, does he have a name?
Yeah.
What's his name?
Jaden.
He may seek you out sometime, or he'll hear about you from others. And when he finds what you've done with your life completely changing around, you may have that gift thrown back at you.
Right.
But, yeah, those memories have got to be rough.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Do those memories of him ever ignite something in you that says, maybe I should drink a little bit to take away those memories?
Yeah, I continued using after I left her. I continued using and drinking because of that. You know, I
sure.
just escaped reality by getting inebriated.
So what was the final? What was the turning point where you said to yourself, I owe myself a better life? And was it either somebody made you? Did you do it to yourself? Did you come to a point where you said, I'd like to see what it's going to be like if I can try to be sober and get some help? Did you get help, Jay?
Yeah, I got help just recently for the last time. I mean, that jumps years ahead.
You got help from a group of people or from one person, or how did you do that? Did you seek somebody
back
out?
Back then?
Yeah.
Back then I got in trouble.
Okay.
So when I turned 25, my second daughter was on the way.
Yeah.
So my daughters are only like a year apart.
You okay.
Know, my first daughter was 3 months old and she got pregnant again.
Right.
So we have our second daughter on the way, and me and the mother, we got into a domestic dispute, and I basically threw a big rock through the windshield while my newborn was sitting in the passenger wheel because she threatened to take off to go get the cops.
Yeah.
This is in Montana, right?
Right.
So she was pulling out, and I threw a big old, like a boulder through the windshield, and not thinking, you know, I was drunk at the time.
Sure.
You know, I could have hurt my daughter.
Yep.
And that hurt, you know, it sobered me up. I went on a dry spell for, I want to say, like 8 years. But I wasn't clean. I just turned one addiction into another, and I started heavily smoking pot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not drinking, right?
No, I didn't drink. That scared me so bad. Like, we both got domestic dispute charges. We both got child endangerment charges. We both woke up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, the mother of my kids' mom, the grandma, took my two little ones in.
Yeah.
And it was sad to see them, you know, being raised by another woman and not us.
Yeah.
So it hurt. You know, it still hurts to this day. But I'm thankful they didn't get to, you know, get put in child care or was that child protective services.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the grandmother took them in.
So let me ask you a question. When you were not drinking and you were pulled in, like you said, smoking pot heavily, did you feel that you just substituted one thing for another? Did you ever feel that way? Like, eventually, did you feel, well, hey, I'm not really doing myself any good here. I'm not drinking, yes, but you're still getting high, and and you don't have your senses about you, and you're probably, you know, in another awful rut. I mean, look.
To this day,
yeah,
it's crazy because I know what it was back then.
Yeah.
But I had a reservation.
Right.
to continue drinking. Okay. It was always that back burner on a stove, I like to call it.
Yeah.
The pilot light was still lit.
Yep.
I always wanted to ask the mother of my children, hey, let's go get a bottle.
Yeah.
Let's go get a couple 40s because that's what we drank. I always wanted to ask her that every day, but I didn't.
Okay, go ahead. Until when?
Until I was like 31.
Right.
I finally bit the bullet and I asked her, our kids are a little older now.
Yeah.
Why don't we go to the bar? Let's go have a couple pitchers of beer. And she agreed. And it was off to the races again.
And tell everybody, when you're off to the races again, obviously we know what that means. When you haven't drank for a while and you're off to the races again, tell people how quick it can be where you're right back in that cycle again.
It was a matter of maybe a month or two.
Yep.
We were substituting beer. We put the beer away and we started getting hard liquor.
Yeah.
Drinking it straight out of the bottle.
Yeah. It's hard.
Chasing it.
It's really hard to explain to somebody that has no clue how quick the disease can catch you. Like it says in the book or whatever, where the guy went 20-something years and then he pulled over and he bought a couple of bottles and he threw it in. He threw some milk and one of the booze into a cup and he drank it and he was right back. The vicious cycle. He was right back to where he was those 20 years ago. And people say, you have to learn something about yourself in all that time. You don't, because it brings you back right back where you were. It hits you just as hard or harder.
Yep, twice fold sometimes.
So when you started to... tell us what it was like when you first began sober for the first time and stayed sober. When you started nearing your sobriety day, tell us what that was like for your life. How you changed that around?
I actually got tired. I got tired of running because I was a runner. I ran from my mom and my stepdad when I was 16. So I was like, hey, that worked.
Yeah.
So when I was 31, all the way up until, I don't know, when I was almost 40.
Okay.
I was in, a couple relationships. Like, I would run from relationship to relationship with women, and I would just basically use them. And so, not so much as a place to crash,
but
a place to crash. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
But you got tired of that.
I got tired of it real quick. I'm getting older. I worked construction all my life, so my body was getting beat up. It's just drinking after work, drinking during work, drinking before work.
Yeah.
And it just got tiring. It was, like you said, the vicious cycle.
Did all that glamour become not glamorous anymore?
No, it didn't. It just fizzled out.
Right.
I look in the mirror one morning, I'm like, oh, my God, you look like Frankenstein, buddy.
So when you became sober, did you do it on your own? Did somebody tell you where to go? Did you go to a meeting? What did it tell us about that?
This last go-around, I did it on my own.
Okay.
I went back to what I knew. I basically started living in a car again.
Okay.
And that was Newtown. I moved back to Newtown to geographical change, came back to Newtown, started living in a car. And it was November-ish, so it was getting cold.
Yeah.
And, if you want me to tell the story, I could.
Well,
my last go-around.
I'd like to hear, and I think our listeners would like to hear, how you came to grips with yourself. You said it was getting tight. You were tired of being on the run, basically. You were tired of the drinking. I want to hear myself how you felt when you first, and what you did to stay sober. That's what people want to know.
Yeah. I actually, like I said, I was living in a car. It was getting cold. I was running out of places to stay.
Yeah.
My auntie would get us a room in a little hotel or a little motel in Newtown for a week.
Yeah.
That ran out.
Yeah.
And my mom's sister, my other auntie, we'd go over there and eat, because I was staying with my cousin at the time. I called her my sister, and it was her vehicle we were sleeping in.
Right.
And my auntie said, you guys come on over and stay with me. So we'd go over there and eat, hot meals.
Yep.
And I told her, I said, I'm trying to get into treatment. But at the time, I had money. I wanted to continue drinking, so I did.
Yeah.
Then eventually all that ran out, and it started getting cold. And there was, we couldn't sleep in her car no more because it was too cold.
Yeah.
So my auntie's like, you know, you guys come stay with me until you get into treatment.
And you say treatment. So, where was the treatment at, if you can say?
I went to Raleigh.
Okay.
Impaired Recovery Center.
And how long were you in the recovery center for?
60 days.
What was that like in the first week or two? Were you...
Oh, the first week was horrible. Like, I was on a good drunk from July to November.
Yeah.
That summer, I just tried to stay drunk. Like, I tried, but I couldn't. I, you know, ran out of options, ran out of money, ran out of places to stay. So, yeah, I just, I'm going to treatment. And in Newtown, you know, we have resources there.
Yeah.
There's a little, you know, rehabilitation community.
Right.
So I called them, and I basically got an evaluation lined up. And they told me I had to go get a physical, you know, jump through the hoops is like what I call it.
Yeah.
To get into treatment.
Sure.
So I did that for about 4 weeks. I jumped through those hoops, waiting for that call.
Yeah.
You know, for a bed to open up. Send me anywhere.
Yeah.
Send me to California. Send me to Florida.
Yeah.
Anywhere. I'm tired of sleeping on these couches.
Let me ask you this. Deep down, were you afraid to get that call? Did you still?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was very afraid because the whole time I was living with my auntie.
Yeah.
I was still drinking like a pint a day of vodka.
Oh, yeah. You still had,
$3 vodka. Sure. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you still had the freedom to drink.
Yep. I drank all the way up to the night before I went to treatment. I went into treatment still buzzed up.
And you told everybody, hey, man, I can't wait, you know, to start a new life, but you're still able to drink.
Yeah.
While you're waiting for that call, man. I must have waited 3 weeks for my call, and it seemed like forever. And I didn't want that call to come around. I was scared.
Nope.
I was scared. I didn't know how I was going to have a brand new life. I didn't think it was possible.
No.
I didn't want to lose my old life. I didn't want to lose the alcohol. I did not want to. I couldn't picture myself without one day drinking. Was that the same way you were?
That was exactly it. I was like, man, I did. You know, I wanted this change for other people looking in.
Yeah.
At Jay Rizzo, you know, like.
Yeah.
You know, this guy needs help. But in my soul looking out, it's like, I don't need help. I got this. You know, at the same time, I'm, you know, taking a shot in between those thoughts.
Yeah. So you get that call. Tell us what that was like when you get the call. You went in there buzzed.
The call,
buzzed.
Like you said, the call, like you said, I was scared.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, here's the call.
Yeah.
They said, hey, we got a bed for you.
Yeah.
We want you to show up in 2 days.
Yeah.
Down at the jail, there's going to be a transport van. We want you there at 10 a.m.
Yeah.
Like, okay. You know, I was kind of, I was buzzed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll do this. So the next day rolls around, you know, I'm coming down, starting to feel horrible, starting to feel normal.
Yeah.
You know, hanging over hard.
Yeah.
And I got like, you know, $8 in my pocket. And what I do, I go to the liquor store. Okay, one last hoorah.
Well, why not?
I go buy a bottle, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about, now that you said you're almost 3 years sober, right? Or you are 3 years sober. Okay.
Yeah, in November, I'll be 3 years.
Do you ever think about, I know it's tough back then, obviously, but as you progress and you go year after year after year, day after day after day, you're going to think about how that was an amazing time of your life. Of that being scared, of that unknown, of I can't do this, but I want to do this. But do I really want to do this? Do I really want to give up the drinking? No, hell no, I don't want to. The unknown. I mean, it's amazing to me when I think about those days that went on in my life. In a weird way, I kind of wish I could go back and experience what that was like. Not the drinking, but the living in a recovery. So when you got the call and you went there, you obviously stayed was it a home or what kind of facility was it?
Raleigh, North Dakota it's an old elementary / like middle school that they converted. It's actually a boys and girls ranch type environment. They converted it into a treatment center.
Wow.
So it's like, I want to say like 40 plus miles out of Newtown. I mean, Bismarck here.
Yeah.
It's basically in the middle of nowhere.
That's really neat.
Yeah. It's like, it's almost like an Alcatraz of treatment centers, you know. I mean, you could take out walking and good luck finding a ride.
Was there men and women?
Yes, it was co-ed, yeah.
When you got there and you started getting situated, did they have daily things for you to do? Did they go over some of the steps with you? Did they have counselors talk to you? What did they basically?
Yeah, we had a schedule, like a regimen every day. Like,
sure.
We'd have groups in the morning, groups in the afternoon, and then like after 4:35-ish, after the staff goes home, it's basically free time. But
yep.
We'd also have like AA meetings every week.
Yeah.
You know, we'd have activities, treatment stuff.
What did you think of your first AA meeting?
I actually didn't like it. I was scared.
You know why I laugh? Because it's so true. Were you like, oh, shut up. I'm listening to these people whining and now be quiet. I can't relate.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, I'm too cool. I was the cool guy in the back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I was the cool guy in the back with my hat low, just observing back to the wall.
Well, you don't want to be, you know what? A big party, it doesn't want to give up the drink, you know?
Yeah.
How long were you in this facility for?
6 days.
When you were, do you remember a time in the 60 days when someone came up to speak that really clicked in your head and really you related to? Remember the first time that an AA meeting became a turnaround and became?
Yes.
You do. Tell us about that.
It was the second week in there. So we had AA meetings Thursday nights at 7 p.m. And there was three ladies from Bismarck here that had, multiple years of sobriety in them. And they would come out there because they graduated from that treatment facility.
Yeah.
So they came out to speak. And as we sat in a big circle of like 50 of us in an AA meeting.
Yeah.
And as we were going around, it went to those three ladies, and just the energy they had, the feelings of just happiness, joyous, free, it was so overwhelming. Like, I want that. I want to be that person. I want to be happy. And it changed me.
Yeah.
My second week in treatment. It's okay.
You know what?
There's something to this.
You said the perfect couple of words there that I can relate to in a heartbeat. You noticed how free they were, right? You noticed how genuinely happy they were, right?
Yeah.
And they had been there themselves in their own recovery, right? They had started there, right?
Yes.
Have you been back to this place?
I've been back twice.
Isn't it glorious? Isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
And you know why it's glorious, right? Because you remember the scary times. You remember the times when you're thinking, I don't want to go. I don't want to be part of this. This guy's yapping on about it. Blah, I'm so happy. Blah, blah, blah. I don't want to be. And now when you go back there, you remember those things and you have something to pass on to people that are in the. You do. You know that, right?
Exactly. It was awesome going back.
Why don't you tell everybody what you got going on? You said you have a YouTube thing?
Yeah, I actually have a YouTube channel. It's called Recovery Warrior. Capital R / Warrior, all lowercase.
Okay.
So that I started a couple months ago.
All right.
I basically ask recovering addicts and alcoholics to come on, tell their story, don't tell war stories. Basically, just come on and tell their story. I let them talk. I kind of do like what you do, podcast breaking everyone, so I ask them a question.
Yep.
But I let them talk for at least 40 minutes.
Oh, that's great.
Tell your story. Tell us the meat and potatoes of addiction.
Yeah.
And tell us why you are a warrior in this recovery.
How long have you been doing this?
Recovery Warrior. It's going on 3 months now.
Do me a favor. When we're done here, will you message me, Facebook message me the exact link or address that I need so I can put it, when I'm done with this podcast and I send it back to you, I can put it on my, there is a way out so people can have a chance to check it out themselves. How much do you love doing that?
Oh, I love it. Man, I have speakers every week. We film it here at the Sober Living House.
Yeah.
And, I edit it out and I put the meat and potatoes of what I think people would want to hear.
Yeah.
Being selfish, obviously. And I put it out. I'm getting subscribers, 4 or 5 every week. My subscription membership is growing. People are telling me I'm doing a good thing. They're like, oh, you're doing a really good thing. But I don't see it. I'm just being a guy in recovery.
Why don't you see it? Why don't you see it? Do you think?
It's weird.
Do you think I do a good thing?
Exactly. Yeah, you do. Like, I heard you. I brother Brandon is one of my brothers, and he sent me the link of him on your show, and I believe he put it on Facebook, and I watched that, and I'm like, wow, Bromo, you know, I heard your voice on the radio all the time.
Yeah, it's a lousy voice. Let me throw this back to you, Jay. If you think I do a good job, I can guarantee you that I will think that you do a good job with what you do. Anything you give back to in recovery is just awesome. It's flat out awesome. That's my feeling.
Cool.
You coming on here on a Wednesday? God, it feels like a Thursday, doesn't it? You coming on here middle of the week with me at night in the afternoon and giving me almost 45 minutes so far. It's been that to me is huge, and that's what you give the platform to other people when they come on with you.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. I don't know, man. Like I said, I don't see it.
I do.
I'm just being a dude in recovery, you know?
Well, and I'll tell you, Brother Brandon was fabulous. I'm drinking out of a cup he gave me. You know that Sober Talk? That
big, oh, yeah.
Oh, my God, is that great.
Yeah. I was actually on his show last year.
Oh, I got to check that out. Okay, so as you stay sober and as you do these things, what's called giving back, you know, what a model you become now for your daughters. You know that, right? You know that, right?
Yes.
Are you still in contact with them?
Yeah. Yeah, I talk to them at least once a week. They're grown now. They started their own little families.
And okay.
I'm letting them be.
Can they listen to this podcast maybe?
Yeah. I'm actually going to go see them on Friday. My granddaughter's first birthday is in Billings. So me and my fiance are going to head out Friday and go check that out, and we'll be back Sunday.
How'd you meet your fiance? Way to go, buddy. That's cool.
I met her on Facebook.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I'll tell you, I've got the face for radio, which means I was close to getting married one time, and that was when I was drinking. And that's when I was given the, hey, I'll, you know, that's when I was given the, if you keep drinking, I'll leave you. And she threw that curveball at me three times until she left. But you have to be super proud of the people that you're with now, the people that you're touching. How often do you do your YouTube thing? A week, once a week, or?
Yeah, I put out a new episode like every Thursday.
Isn't that cool?
In between there, like I'm a sober living house manager at the Three Affiliated Tribes Sober House.
Yeah.
We call it MHA Sober Living.
Yeah.
I've been here for 2 years. I'm the lead house manager at this house. And, you know, I've been asking people to come on that I know in the recovery community.
Yeah.
And it's just awesome. Like,
wait a minute. tell me that last part again. You're a manager. You're aware now? Tell me that again.
I'm in it's called the MHA Sober Living, or Sober Lodge. It's basically a sober living house for tribal members from the Three Affiliated Tribes.
Yeah.
So they have, I want to say at least close to 10 houses, you know, throughout the res. There's one in Arizona.
Yeah.
And they put us tribal members up in sober living. But also, you know, there's requirements to live here.
Of course.
And I came, so I went to treatment. My sobriety day, 11/18/21, was the day I went to treatment.
Yeah.
And I went to treatment for 2 months. I discharged January 14th, and I came straight to the sober living house.
Yeah.
And I've been here since. You know, I get paid to be the sober living house manager here. I also have a coworker, so there's two of us that run this house. I have 11 roommates, and I'm still here. You know, I sponsor people. I, you know, just leading by example, you know.
See, I have to tell you how envious I am of you. Do you know that? I have to tell you what a difference you've made in my life. And you were just saying 5 minutes ago, oh, I'm not sure, you know, what kind of difference I make or whatever, if I do any good. And that's just one person, me, that's already envious and already proud of what you do, and you've already touched my life. See what a difference that you make?
Thank you.
And you know, as an experience, you know the most critical time is for every day, and every second is critical in sobriety. You know that, and I know that. But you know that the really, really critical time is when someone's scared and they come into a house and they're not sure where their life is going. And, you know, you live that.
Mm-hmm.
you live that and you're able to look at them and assure them that if they just don't drink every day and they stay alert and they stay and they're willing, your life can change in 1,000,000,000,000,000 ways.
Yes.
Isn't that awesome?
It is awesome. Happy, joyous, and free.
Happy, joyous, and free. And there's many reasons why the book has so many cool things in it. And it's not like you and I made them up.
Yeah.
But I loved what you said. My favorite part of this whole podcast that I can relate to is what you said. And I'll repeat it if you don't mind. There you are in the back of the room. And you're not loving being there. And it's just another AA meeting. Blah, 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 blah. Look at me. Blah, blah, blah. I'm the greatest. Blah, 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 blah. You're all horrible because blah, blah, blah. But then those ladies came in and touched your life because they were free, right?
Right.
See, that shows what a huge heart you have, and you're in the perfect position where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have a higher power, and our higher power, and I know that you have the same higher power, that our higher power has designated you to do what you do.
Yes.
And isn't that a compliment?
Right.
So listen, is there anything you want to tell anybody? If anybody's out there right now listening going, yeah, you know, I can still drink. I've been told by my dad or my fellow worker that I should give a listen to this podcast because this person thinks maybe I drink too much. Ha, I can continue to live this lifestyle. Or the people that are sitting there going, I don't know what to do. There's a lot of resources out there, isn't there, Jay?
Yes, there is.
What would you tell someone that's on the fence that feels that they may have a problem?
I would tell them to surrender.
Yeah. Yeah.
Surrender. Surrender, surrender.
There's no shame in that, is there? There's no shame in surrendering.
No.
Again.
Look at me. I'm going to be 46 in June, and I finally sobered up when I was 43. You know, I'm not homeless. I have a bed.
Yeah.
You know, I have a pillow to lay on.
Yep.
But I'm a sober living house manager.
Yeah.
I have a lovely fiance. I'm going to be with her for 2 years in May. And I'm happy. We're happy, me and my fiance.
Yeah.
You know, it's just awesome, man. Just this sobriety, just this way of life is awesome. And I'm fine with it. I keep it simple.
And you
got a future trip.
You got a wonderful YouTube device that you're able to spread the message and have other people come on and share without being interrupted. I love that.
Right.
So way to go, man. Too. Way to go. Yeah. You know what? And once again, this is another person I've never met face-to-face in a long time.
Yeah.
You should have seen. It was pretty funny in here. Brother Brandon, and I'm pretty sure he won't mind me saying this because it was a deal. It was on the podcast. He came in and he goes, you don't mind if I put this on Facebook Live, and I'm like, oh, God, anybody who sees my gross-looking ugly face, there's a reason why I do these things with an audio and not a video.
Yeah.
He puts this thing up, and we just go at it, and he just takes over. He's awesome. I love his energy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he is.
And I can feel that in you, too, pal. You know?
Nice. Thank you.
You're welcome. Congratulations on your life and your fiancé waiting to snatch you away. And
yes. Thank you.
Your daughters that you're going to see and
continue
to do what you do without questioning yourself. Without a question, you are a huge difference in a lot of people's lives.
Thank you.
So hang on with me real quick, okay, pal?
Okay.
All right, hang on with me. All right, again, this is why I love this podcast so much. That was Jay Rizzo, another guy that has turned his life around and now is making others aware that there is a way out for all of you out there, for anybody who may have a friend or a family member or someone that's suffering. See if there's a chance they can listen to this, because I'm telling you, there is a way out.